Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore how to apply skills and competencies to the world of work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Skills of the Future, and our mini-series on HR Game Changers, applying skills and competencies to the world of work. In this episode, we are going to be talking about all things unconscious bias related. My name is Andrea Butler, and I'm your host and principal consultant at Perennial Talent. My guest today is Cassandra DeYoung. She's the director of people operations for ProCogia, a data science consulting company. After moving to Vancouver from South Africa in 2016, she decided to switch things up and get into recruiting after an interesting progression as a consumer marketer and formerly an artist. The common theme running throughout each of these roles is the ability to see the bigger picture and make meaningful connections, be it between consumer and product or culture and company. Cassandra leads with empathy and heart, allowing her to unpack and peel open uncomfortable topics, creating a safe space for vulnerability. Her greatest asset is her ability to build confidence in people, leveraging the strengths of her team and driving self-awareness in the workplace. Welcome to the show, Cassandra.
Hi. Hey, Andrea.
So let's start with our fun icebreaker of the day. What's something that you've been watching or you read lately that you'd recommend?
Funny enough, to try and avoid being too serious about the matter, I'm going to dive into something quite serious just off the bat here. One of my closest friends who's still in South Africa is an incredible entrepreneur. She recently sent me this free trial for Masterclass. I don't know if you've heard or watched any of the Masterclass series before, but it's really great. It's these very short, punchy, classes by all types of celebrities and inspirational people. Now instead of aimlessly scrolling through Netflix, I just throw on one of those. I've just finished the one on Jeff Koons, who's one of my favorite contemporary artists. And the next on my list is a new one that's just come out called Lessons from Influential Black Voices, which, to be honest, I wished I listened to before this podcast, seeming as it's quite an appropriate topic.
I was going to say, very timely for today's discussion. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of today's discussion, then, first question I have for you is, how has an organization's strategy, do you think, towards managing unconscious bias changed or evolved?
Well, I'll first start off by saying that I am actually quite new to the organization. I've only been there for a couple of months now. But one of the things that attracted me to the organization was their emphasis on including BIPOC individuals and maintaining a 40 to 50% woman identifying ratio in the company, which is pretty unheard of for a tech company. We know that tech is quite a male dominated industry. So the emphasis on this area was something that really did attract me to the company in the first place. So, I'm lucky in a sense that I'm starting off with a management or a leadership team that already has the buy-in to eliminate unconscious bias. Moving forward, I've got good foundation or good footing to start implementing those changes from a top level running through the organization.
And in terms of challenges, what are some of those challenges that you've seen when it comes to certainly helping employees reduce and become aware of unconscious bias?
So I'll start by saying this. We refer to this as unconscious bias, like I think it's become almost a little bit of a buzzword. But to be honest with you, unconscious bias is actually a very much so a conscious effort. So it's actually not unconscious at all. We need to be very conscious about this and very intentional. And one of those things that make create or build up challenges or hurdles that we might face when trying to implement or roll out something like this is the fact that change is uncomfortable. It just is. It's a human nature thing. We are often, resistant to change, particularly if we've been set in a certain way or idea for a certain amount of time. And another huge challenge that comes with that, and probably hand in hand with that, is the fact that we tend to exclude while trying to include. And when I say that, what I'm referring to is that we often try and speak less about the white man than we do because we're trying to pivot focus. Whereas if we actually tackle head on and have these uncomfortable conversations with white men primarily, we can actually really start seeing like change from a deep roots or a foundational level. So for me, the biggest challenge is that change management piece. It's the ability to unpack uncomfortable topics and conversations with people that have never been faced with something like this before, with this idea before.
Do you have any kind of tips or recommendations for how, as you said, to unpack those uncomfortable conversations?
I think that for the most part, it's having the conversation in the first place. So we tend to want to dance around words like white man, the word black. Like we want to sort of sugarcoat words that have, you know, any sort of like canonical reference or any sort of discomfort surrounding that word. But I think the biggest thing is just to say it, to just come out and have those conversations. So what is the foundation of unconscious bias? Like, where do those words come from? You know, how systemic is it? It goes way back, deep back into humanity. And we can't dance around these things anymore. So my biggest tip is to have the conversation in a very straightforward way. I would say not in a group setting. You know, I would particularly speak to, you know, one or two individuals at a time, and just create a safe space for vulnerability. So that is, being vulnerable yourself will allow people to feel comfortable being vulnerable around you. And when I say be vulnerable yourself, is come at the conversation with full acknowledgement and understanding of your own personal unconscious biases, you know, so being able to admit to your own sort of not faults, but areas of opportunity, being able to confront the decisions that you've made in your past that you could potentially change or make differently moving forward, using live examples of times where you've been in situations that have been uncomfortable, will often then allow, you know, the person on the receiving end to share the same sort of similar discomforts with you. And I think that's where it really starts in terms of tackling change management, is being able to, not only have the tough conversations with individuals, but also be able to quite easily spot those key change agents within your organization. A change agent obviously being somebody who is very well liked within their workplace community. And often you'll find those people are the ones having most of the conversations behind the doors of, or behind the earshot really, of leadership or management. So those are the kinds of people that you want to talk to first, because you know that that's going to then ripple through the organization thereafter.
And so you've talked about change management and creating those change agents as a key skill, if you will. Are there other skills or competencies that you feel are important right now for an organization to reduce unconscious bias?
Well, yes, there are. There's loads of actual, in terms of hard skills, it would be more so using tools to manipulate language. So I'd say language is a huge one. And there are a lot of free tools online that can help you with that. So I'll give you an example. There are words that are written in job descriptions or job ads that are more masculine than feminine. Words like expert or world-class will frequently put women identifying people off of applying for a job ad. Similarly to having a requirements list that is more than 5 points. Typically you'll come across a job ad that's like up to 10 to 15 different points of must-have requirements. And you'll find that if a woman identifying person doesn't have 100% of those requirements, they are not going to apply for the role. Now, men only need to hit 60% of those requirements to feel confident applying. So what happens is you end up getting loads and loads of men applying and not enough women applying to those roles. So that's really one way that you can start eliminating just the applications that come through your portals, is just by identifying the language and the requirements. The rest I wouldn't say is hard skills or hard tools to use. As I mentioned, like being able to have those conversations, finding those change agents. And then lastly, utilizing all the tools that I've just mentioned above in actually training hiring managers. So a lot of the time, like your interviewers just, they haven't been trained in their full, in like the proper or full capacity that we could be doing. So sitting down and actually, you know, putting together, you know, go-to sheets, role-playing interviewer, interviewee kind of questions and analysis like that can often help in a training process. Like when you're training a hiring manager to conduct an interview and eliminate as many of those words as possible.
Absolutely. Good, some good tips there. And if you're an organization and don't do some of those things, what do you think the future threats or pain points will be?
Well, it's important to mention that, you know, unconscious bias, or, you know, like I like to refer to as something a little bit more conscious, ties in very much so to the DE&I initiatives that we've seen a lot of companies start, you know, rolling out or doing. Now, those initiatives, we always tend to look inside before we look outside. So everything that I've even spoken about thus far all has to do with the people that are within your organization. But what about the product? What about what, you know, the tools that you're using? What about the vendors on your vendor list? What about the key stakeholders that you do business with on a day-to-day basis? What do their teams look like? What do their products look like? Like, if you don't start facilitating this change, at least from the most small and minute level, eventually we're going to get to a point where, you know, other companies are not going to want to work with you because they know that you're not trying to facilitate this change, which is, you know, within the best human interest of the world, really. So for me, I would say the biggest threat is just fading away as a company and not being, you know, a partner with the rest of, you know, your sort of industry, or within myself as the tech industry, or that sort of thing. So I'd say, yeah, probably just the loss of business, really.
So the reputation you have.
Yeah. No, I mean, people applying, like there's a, you know, a lot of individuals, particularly coming into, you know, the sort of, what can I say, hashtag woke era. A lot of our up and coming candidates are, you know, millennials, Gen Z. They're all walking into organizations that they feel a personal connection with beyond just a 9-to-5 paycheck, clock in, clock out. They're not going to be applying to the organizations that they don't feel match with their cultural sense of community. So, you know, in terms of attracting talent, you've got that side of the coin that you will be losing on quite badly, to be honest. And then on the other side, people actually that you want to partner with from like a more business to business or vendor management level. So, you know, it's unavoidable, unfortunately, or fortunately.
So you've touched upon some of the tools, from interview training to reducing the bias in the language you use in job ads. Are there any other actions you recommend that a company take if they're looking to mitigate threats and reduce bias?
I would say, be intentional and just start. Like oftentimes, you know, particularly if organizations don't have the means or the capacity to maybe outsource a consultant, which there are many that you can reach out to for help. But if you can't, I would say that just starting is important. You know, sometimes we feel like we can't start something unless we have a very clear or distinct roadmap. But I myself am very much a fan of building the plane while it flies. So we might make a few mistakes, you know, along the way. But at the end of the day, it's those small changes that you are trying to drive within your organization are the ones that are going to, you know, start being the change agents within your actual teams. And be able to, you know, facilitate movement. And that's what we want. We want things to move and not stagnate. So, you know, making those small changes is a big thing. Don't ignore it. As I said, fortunately, this is an unavoidable situation. We are needing to do this, you know, as a very much a holistic approach to growing as organizations, particularly now that we've all got global footprints. I mean, with the, you know, recent pandemic and the fact that everybody's working remotely, borders have fallen. You know, we're hiring across borders all the time, and we can work remotely now. So if you want to be part of that global village, you've got to jump on board. So I'd say ignoring it is probably the worst thing that you can do, but just simply starting is fine. The internet is full of wonderful tools too. I would say, like, you reach out to me. I've got can connect you with some great consultants. There's some great free online tools that you can use to put your, you know, job ads in, and they will, it will spit out where you've gone wrong in terms of language that you've used. So you don't even really need to be a professional or a subject matter expert yourself. You can rely on the tools that are around you. And you know, there are a lot of very passionate people out there who would be willing to help and lend some advice. So I would say the best action that you can do is just action of any kind.
Is there any particular area you would recommend people if, you know, they're looking to improve perhaps how they go about reducing unconscious bias, that they start looking at that particular area?
Yeah. So I'd say it's important to not think about this as hitting a metric. Like, okay, we're not looking to like hit a metric in terms of what our product or people look like within your teams. We're looking at this topic very holistically, you know? So I would say before you even start implementing any change in your organization, take the time to fully wrap your head around what this means yourself. So, you know, I've spent a lot of time myself, you know, speaking to people, watching videos, doing lots of reading, having uncomfortable conversations, speaking to some of the people already in my organization about how they feel, you know, having those conversations myself, gathering my thoughts toward myself to be able to communicate those properly to the relevant stakeholders. And that's what's really important, is you've got to have a level of passion or fire within yourself, because that will naturally shine out when you're having conversations with leadership. And at the end of the day, you need to have leadership buy-in, because they will champion this moving forward. So I'd say the best sort of thing that I could do or say in terms of advice is try and consume. And once you've consumed the relevant information, let it sit and ruminate for a little while. And then once you have a really good understanding yourself, go out into the workplace and just start having those conversations.
Makes sense. That was actually the last question that I had for you today. Is there anything else that you wanted to add on the topic?
Well, you know, I would say that South Africans in general are pretty direct people. So this might come across as a pretty direct sort of statement. But I'd say in this day and age, there's no excuse. So, we have what we have available to us. If the thing that's limiting or holding people back is fear. And I know that it can be an uncomfortable place to sort of sit in and be around, but confronting these things head on and face on, particularly being in our sort of vocation as HR professionals, it's really important for us to actually dive into that. So I'd say dive in, don't be afraid. Like, if you stumble or make mistakes, it's okay. Allow the people in your organization to stumble and make mistakes too. What we're trying to do here is we're building the future. We're not trying to, snap and click change overnight. We want to work at this from a very holistic perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to thank you, Cassandra, for coming on the show today.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks to our listeners for joining us. And if you want to reach out and, learn about any of those tools that Cassandra mentioned or pick her brain a little bit more, the best place to reach her would be on LinkedIn. So thanks again, Sandra.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to our listeners.
Cheers.